A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on Apple Podcasts.
Dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, dumpty, da, da, dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, diddly, dum, dumpty, diddly, dumpty, diddly, dumpty, diddly, dum, dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, diddly, dum.
This is Dumpty Dum, a podcast about the archers and the goings-on of Ambridge. I'm the careful construction that is Stephen Bowden.
And I'm the glamorous fruit and nut woman who is Jacqueline Berto.
And then there's you, our lovely Dumpty Dummers, who are going the whole hog with a six-course tasting menu. Welcome to Dumpty Dum, a show about our favourite country village. This week's episodes of The Archers were written by Tim Stimpson, who had the privilege of bringing Robert Snell back into our hearing. And coming up, we have calls from...
Witherspoon, who is playing fast and loose with the Goldwater rule.
Lillian, who isn't entirely happy with the return of Robert.
Catherine, who has strong views on Pip's parenting style.
And finally, Brian, who isn't impressed with Pip either. We also have an email from Emma in the Midlands and one from Chris in Indiana. Plus, we have The Week in Ambridge by Suey, a roundup of the Facebook group from Vicky, and the Tweets of the Week from Theo. But before we start talking too much, let's remind ourselves of what happened over the last 7 days with a roundup of The Week in Ambridge from Suey.
Hello, lovely people. It's Suey, Queen of Tart here, and it's time for the roundup of This Week in Ambridge. Pip and Stella. Ugh. We need some ground rules over how many times Stella doesn't have to do second mummy duty for Rosie after the marathon puppet show. Pip was very unenthusiastic about talking off it, so they went off for a bedroom session instead. And Stella tried very hard to draw some line, completely unsuccessfully. Brian and Miranda had a date. Kate made herself scarce while they had whiskey. And then Stella was offered a Ned by Justin on the BL board. Brian was very unimpressed. Well, Justin said he got his knickers in a twist. Justin really is a bit of a sheet, isn't he? The wind got taken right out of his sails when he saw Miranda. There was a good deal of single entendre, backbiting, and accusations of gold digging. There'll be tears before bedtime, I'm quite sure. There was a good deal of drama with the new Robert over grumpy B&B guests. He's a loose end and needs a job, or several preferably. Lindy Bottom tried to get him doing watercolour painting. It was not successful. Both Lindy and Robert seemed to be standing for chair for the cricket committee. Hannah admitted to a pash for Chris to Stella, so both of them are agreeing to play on the cricket team, and Hannah is up for some private coaching. There were ridiculous bits about how old Bath will be the horses. George is convinced it's a money-making opportunity and persuaded other people to do his research. I suppose at least it kept Robert busy. I absolutely lost the will to live over it. Bartleby is about 40, which is pretty juvenile comparison to the previous oldest horse. Well, I suppose we'll find out in the fullness of time. I hope you all have a lovely week.
So, Jacqueline, how was your week? How's it been treating you?
My week was very good, actually. Very, very busy. Loads of stuff going on, including today we have a ceremony to celebrate the end of the war in Algeria in 1962 or 1963 or 1964. So we have a memorial at the war memorial with the old boys who were served then. Then we obviously have the obligatory aperitif afterwards, because that's what we do in France. So that's at 11 o'clock this morning. So hopefully we'll be finished by then. How are you? How's your week been, Steve?
It's my last week at work before Easter, it was. So I've had to make sure I've done all the things I need to do before the end of the financial year, which is at the end of March. And that includes annual appraisals for the staff for whom I'm directly responsible. So I had to make sure I'd done all of those, not too many of them, luckily, and got them all logged in the system. But I also thought to reward my staff for lots of hard work and so forth, I also did some baking last weekend. So they ended up getting Simnel cake and hot cross buns.
Ah, how yummy. What a great boss you must be. I wish my boss did that. Oh, that's me.
Isn't Lowett your boss?
Certainly not. Is everybody else's boss, not mine.
And then next week I'm off because I've got the delight of taking Tangle to the dentist on Wednesday, and I've got people coming in to rip out my drains on Monday.
Oh, right. So you've got a busy week as well, whereas I'll be struggling through budget meetings and translating for English dementia patients in France. You'll have all the drains and poor Tangle. Well, we'll think of you on Wednesday when he's yowling.
I can report back on next weekend's podcast, the Easter
Brilliant.
Special.
Look forward to hearing about Tangle and the drains.
That's probably enough about us. So let's get on to the important bit, which is you, our lovely caller, Innerers. And we will start after this with a very familiar sound.
Hello, Tiger.
Y'all know how this goes. Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
Greetings, Jacqueline, Stephen, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here on a Monday morning. First, congrats to Dumpty Dum on 10 years of amazing podcasting, informing and entertaining us, and facilitating a wonderful international community. By the way, next month marks 9 years of me caller-innering. Today, I'd like to discuss Jakob, Brad, and Mia, and the topic of labels, or from my perspective, diagnoses, following the excellent call by Helen last week. First, I'll remind Dumpty Dummers again that as an American psychiatrist, I am bound by what is called the Goldwater Rule. See Barry Goldwater, 1964 Republican candidate for president. I cannot diagnose people I haven't personally examined. Well, as the residents of Ambridge exist in the ether of our collective imagination, and I have done it here countless times before, I shall proceed. As Helen so wisely noted, there is importance to giving a person who presents with a collection of personality traits, behaviors, thoughts, symptoms, etc., a label or diagnosis. It could lead them to much help, such as talking to a professional or assistance with school, work, or housing. So let's get back to Jakob, Brad, and Mia. One thing they all have in common is that they're very bright, which seems to make them a target in Ambridge, especially the younger two. That's most unfortunate. I'd say that Jakob is on the autism spectrum, but Brad has social anxiety. Mia, I'm not sure of, but leaning against the autism spectrum diagnosis. I wonder if anyone has talked with Jakob about the diagnosis and how it would impact his life if he explored it and the associated behaviors that lead him to have difficulties with others. I'd like to work with him. Coincidentally, I have a new patient who is so identical to Jakob in presentation, and we're exploring the autism diagnosis, which seems to be useful to him. Anyway, I'll leave it there. Talk to you soon.
Well, thank you for that call, Witherspoon. It's brilliant. I love hearing from a professional about something that's happening to our fictional characters in The Archers. I think the Goldwater Rule is probably okay. You won't be struck off for this one. Jakob and an autism diagnosis. Would it help him? It's an interesting question. If it, obviously, the labelling, I hate that expression, labelling, but the labelling does help people, as Helen said last week. And maybe, would it change something with Jakob and his behaviours? I don't know. But the person I was particularly interested in was Brad, because a lot of people are very quick to name Brad as someone who's on the spectrum, as people say. But in fact, the fact that he has social anxiety, and I've always said this, he's just a typical, slightly nerdy, teenage boy. Here he is better off in his own room with his computer, with his figures, with his maths, rather than the socializing side of it. And I think him and Mia suit each other perfectly at this stage in their lives.
Yes, I agree. I think that quite a few of the teenagers, Mia, Brad, Chelsea, are just typical teenagers, or they're getting towards the end of their teen years, of course, nearly into their 20s. They're growing up and they're growing into themselves, and they're finding out what works for them. And they're living in something of a goldfish bowl environment in a little village like Ambridge. And frankly, I'd rather, if I had children again, that they grew up like one of those three rather than the complete psychopath that is the other young person that we have to deal with in the shape
of George.
It's useful to understand whether they are developmentally or socially disadvantaged by aspects of their personality that do need to be addressed. I'm not sure, given we've heard of them, whether they are or not. And I'm also not sure that Jacob is that affected by his personality and whether or not it helps in his case to take it into being a personality disorder. I suspect that he doesn't see it as a problem. I think that he sees himself as himself. And he, I think, has learned not to expect the rest of the world to fit the way that he thinks it ought to fit together. But I don't think that the rest of the world necessarily needs to adapt to him very much, because he seems to be getting by perfectly well. And he's become an expert in a field. And he's clearly chosen a field where he can spend more time with animals and with other people. But he seems to, most of the time, get on by quite well. And it's only when he comes up against particularly Tiggerish characters like Paul, a slight clashes and so forth. But then I think that too much Paul would probably irritate almost any of us.
Yes, a saint, I think. Yeah, it's quite interesting because last week I think you mentioned that Cub was showing a lot of traits that from Scandinavian folks that you've met, that he comes across as very Scandinavian. Whereas, of course, we did meet his brother, Eric.
Eric,
had
yes.
The fling with Kirsty, who's disappeared off the face of the earth. And she's obviously in a cupboard somewhere with Eric.
Well, she should be doing the rewilding. I mean, this week was, March Hair Madness or something.
Yeah, and I did. And then we didn't hear her, but we heard that she gave an introductory talk. So she got out of the cupboard.
Yes, so she and Rex should have been fairly active during the week. And it's a bit odd that we didn't hear from them. But that's a bit of a recurring theme, that we are just not getting enough characters in each week.
There was one day this week, I think it was Sunday, when we had 7 speaking people, but the rest of the time it was 6. But there was a lot of reference to a lot of other people. Oh, there's in the pub. Oh, there's Roy. Oh, there's Tom. We don't hear from them, but there's a lot of referencing to the other characters around them.
Thank you for that call, Witherspoon. Let's move on to our next call. And this one is from Lillian in Middlesbrough.
Hi, Dumpty Dummers, Stephen and Jacqueline. It's Lillian from Middlesbrough here. Lillian McCarthy. Things have annoyed me this week in The Archers. The main thing I think that has annoyed me is Robert's personality transplant. I understand that they had to. It's a new voice. I understand that. And I understand that he isn't going to sound the same. But to give him a complete personality transplant, to turn him from Mr. Amiable, lovely, to Mr. Grumpy, it just didn't seem believable. And also, Robert would never have dared get under Linda's feet when she was cleaning. He just wouldn't have done it. It just didn't ring true. So that's the first thing I was disappointed in. Then this ridiculous story with Bartleby. And why would Robert be so kind of thick with George? I don't mean thick as in dense. I mean thick as in a close friendship with somebody like George Grundy. Just the Snells and the Grundys have never really been close, I wouldn't have thought. But anyway, it's nice to see the thing with Brian and Miranda. And I actually can see, and it's going to be interesting, isn't it, to see what else she's going to, how much other dirt she's going to do on Justin. And it's easy to see why Lillian and Justin didn't actually get married in a sense now, I think. So, yeah, that's all going to be interesting when that hits the fan, isn't it? Anyway, I shall get going and speak soon. Take care, everyone. Bye for now.
Thank you very much for that call, Lillian. It's really good to hear from you. There's quite a lot of ground to cover there. But let's start with Robert. And I think we were all somewhat nervous about the reappearance of Robert. My concern to begin with was his voice. It sounded a little bit too much like Justin in some ways. Every so often you got a distinct hint of Robert coming through. And I think that the new actor is trying very hard to sound Robert and have a few of his vocal mannerisms, but it is going to take some getting used to. And I wonder whether he started off in a grumpy mood, because that was a way of, I guess, breaking us into him. If he'd come across trying to be the best of Robert that we're used to, that would have been a bit harder. But there was a bit of irony, I thought, in the line about Linda said about wanting to have her old, nice Robert back. But then there was also a good line from Oliver later in the week where he was talking about Robert and saying that he was obviously full of life or had plenty of life spirit within him. So it was interesting. I think that was Tim Stimpson plucking lines out to just slightly in-jokey, slightly just reminding us that it's a new Robert and so on. And I think we'll get used to him eventually. But yeah, it's always with a change of voice that you do get this slight dislocation. And as I said, I was a bit concerned that this particular voice was a bit too much like Justin's.
Yes, there was a point when they were whispering. He was whispering with Oliver in the hide when they were watching the hares that I thought, who is this? Who are these two? Obviously, the context, I understood it, but their voices, even Oliver and the new actor, new Robert's voice, sounded very similar. But I have to say, I completely disagree with you, Lillian. Often we are completely connected and agree with each other on the Facebook page. But no, I didn't feel like Robert had a personality transplant. I felt that he was grumpy because he was being put under pressure by these house guests and by the bed and breakfast guests who sounded absolutely flaming awful. Really, really awful. So I thought that was a very good use of the script, a use of the plot to introduce this grumpy Robert. And we have seen grumpy Robert a lot in the past. Do you remember when him and Jim had the bird watching battles? He was very grumpy then. So that was, yeah, I wasn't too surprised. I thought it was a good week, a starting week with a lot of him to get us kind of used to his voice. If we just had one scene at the beginning of the week with him, we might have thought the next time we heard him, we might have thought, oh, who's that? But I think we now, by the end of the week, we're getting used to him. He's at a loose end. He's a retired man. Lindy's got all her activities. And I loved the fact that he called her Lindy. I think the cleaning thing was just one of those things. He just happened to be there. But the Bartleby thing, why is Robert helping horrible George? Well, I think it's just a device to show us that actually Robert is really at a loose end now and needs to do something, and that he's used his skills to go and look at microfiches, whatever he looked at in the... which I thought is a good story. So I'm never one who takes against the new voices, but I did feel that it was a very well-written week and a very well-written entry for new Robert.
Yeah, I do think that Yes, it's a bit unlikely that he's that much thick as thieves with George. And I think thick as thieves is appropriate for the likes of that particular Grundy. But I think the storyline itself is an interesting one. There's been a lot of discussion on social media every so often about Bartleby and how old he is and so forth. So this is almost the scriptwriters taking the bull by the horns and actually addressing the question of how old Bartleby is and how old he might be and how plausible that is. The only other animals I think that we've had similar speculation about are the llamas.
Yes. There's only one llama now, isn't there?
Are we just down to...
That's an interesting... There we are. That's your homework for the week, Stephen. Go off and find out how many llamas there are left.
I thought there were still two, but you might...
For some reason,
I
thought one had gone, but...
Well, there were three originally.
There you are then, you see. We're down to two. We were at three. Okay. So llamas obviously passed me by.
The other thing that Lillian mentioned was Brian and Miranda.
Yes.
Now, I keep changing my views on what's going on there. I thought, to begin with, as I think I said last week, Miranda seemed more keen on Brian than Brian was on Miranda. I'm now wondering whether Miranda is actually doing all of this just to get at Justin.
Indeed. That's exactly what I think. I think that she, right from the start, I thought, yes, Brian's obviously a personable man out on the town at Cheltenham Festival with his daughter, very lovely, available. And that, yes, but I think that her whole raison d'etre is to get at Justin. And those scenes at the ball on Friday night had me absolutely, I laughed out loud because it was so bitter and twisted and backbitey. And what did Justin call her? Yes, so Justin referred to Miranda as a grasping, manipulative harpy. I was a bit afraid that you were going to put that in the script. I'm glad I was the glamorous fruit and nut woman and not the grasping, manipulative harpy.
But interestingly, earlier in the week, after the meal that Miranda invited Brian back to her place for...
Oh, yes.
Very explicitly for coffee, but we've already had coffee. You don't get much more unsubtle than that.
No. I think the relationship between Brian and Miranda, there's bound to be some point in Brian's widowhood. Do we say widowhood for a man?
Widowerhood.
Widowerhood. In this phase of his life, that there will be a couple of women who take fancy to him and perhaps he takes a fancy to them. I thought it was a bit soon, especially for Alice and Kate, which is obviously where Brian was coming from, especially for Alice when she's having a bit of a difficult time. But I thought that the writing of Kate this week was absolutely spot on. There were some lines describing the mood he was in and spotting that her dad was in a funny place or avoiding a conversation. I don't know how Tim Simpson comes up with these things, because he really got into the mind of that wiffly-wopply Kate and got her across to us perfectly.
And when Kate and Alice were confronting Brian over whether or not he was in a relationship, I thought that was a very well done little scene with the two of them, each of them saying, why is it me who has to say this? Why aren't you saying that? So I did enjoy that. I do wonder how much he enjoyed Miranda taking Justin down. It's quite hard to say. Was it over the top? Will he have come away from that encounter thinking that Miranda perhaps is a bit too nasty and vicious? And if she's like that to Justin, what's she like about Brian? What has she been like about Brian in the past behind his back and so forth? She just doesn't come across as totally trustworthy.
No, exactly. And I think that's why the part is very well played and written, because she's definitely grating on the edge of my teeth, thinking she must have been a right little madam when she was married to Justin. And if what she's saying to Brian about Justin and his origins and his lack of money to begin with, and it all came from her, from shipping, is it true? We don't know. And either Justin is bluffing, and we know he can bluff when he talks to Lillian, when she says, well, what was that all about? Is he bluffing? Has he not told the truth to Lillian? Or is it that Miranda is just massaging the truth rather a lot to her own advantage to go in and batter Justin through Brian?
Yes, I think, though, Justin did understand some of the digs that Miranda delivered. So I think that fundamentally what she has said is true, but she could well have spun it in a particular direction to come out looking better than perhaps she's entitled to. Perhaps it's a bit more even. But I don't think that it can be completely wrong, because otherwise those digs that she made wouldn't have made any sense, and Justin would not have reacted in quite the, I don't think, not quite submissive, but he took a bit of it rather more than he would have done, I think, that if it had been
completely untrue,
all completely meaningless to him.
Well, it's quite interesting, because they say the best of manipulators are the people who use a grain of truth and a bucket of hogwash.
Yes, the best lies contain a grain of the truth.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Lillian, for that call, which gave us a lot to talk about.
Yes, brilliant. Thanks, Lillian.
We'll move to a different topic, which we haven't talked about so far, and introducing that topic is Catherine.
Hi, it's Catherine. There she goes again. It's bloody Pip trying to get everybody to look after her child. There's Stella having an important business meeting, and they seem unable, these two, to eat without her being there. And then she's trying to get off home, and she has to do a bedtime story, kind of false flattered into it by Pip. It's just rubbish, isn't it? That she's the worst parent, I think, probably. All this, Rosie, I know what Rosie's going to end up like by the time she's year six, year seven. An entitled little madam who gets what she wants and has never said no to. The puppet show thing, honestly, someone should have said no. We are adults, we've got things to do. Yet this is going on, it's a nonsense. So be very interested to know what everybody else thinks about Pip's parenting style and whether Stella should have a word.
Thank you for that, Catherine. Well, as a lot of people will know, I've been listening to this podcast for the last 2 years. I am not a Pip fan. And this week just confirmed every single thing that I think about Pip. But Catherine, as I think works in a secondary school, And so she obviously knows year sixes and year sevens and all those entitled little madams. I think you're completely correct, Catherine. She will end up an entitled little madam, because we even heard Pip say this week, oh yes, you do realise that Rose is the boss round here. Yeah, sums it up. I don't want to get too vitriolic about Pip, but yeah, okay.
Yes, there are a lot of red flags there. And Stella surprised me in her passivity and her inability to bring the topic to a head when she was having that conversation at the end of the week with Pip, and ended up instead staying over and getting into bed with Pip rather than dealing with the Rosie issue head on. And I think that means it's going to fester and just get worse. And it'll be interesting to see what role Hannah plays in all this, because Hannah is sitting there back at the bungalow and is talking a lot of sense to Stella. And Stella is venting towards Hannah about Rosie, and Hannah is providing her with good advice. And if she continues to fail to take that advice, we will get into difficulties further down the line. I think that relationship is actually for the long term. I do think that that is the future of Brookfield.
Yeah.
Is Pip and Stella. So I don't think this is going to break them up, but I think that it is going to be a real strain on things, and it'll be interesting to see how that develops. But there are a couple of other things I wanted to talk about Stella. One of them was a non-executive directorship that she was offered. That makes no sense to me. I think that there must be issues, and we would need somebody like Richard or Glynn to come in on this. But is it appropriate to make somebody who is heavily involved in a contractual relationship with BL as manager of the delivery of the contract between Home Farm and BL, is it appropriate for that person to be a NED on a board, which is supposed to be an
independent non-executive director,
as supposed to offer an independent view to the board from the management of BL? Now, she's not part of the management of BL, but she's hardly independent given that contractual interest. And if she's there to advise on aspects of farming, there have to be conflicts of interest between her role there and her role in delivering the contract.
Yeah, I suppose so. I believed Justin's blah, blah, blah about it, because I thought that, maybe she does know what she's doing. She's part of it. But when you put it like that, it makes me stop and think. So that's something. Yeah, we do need expert advice on this one, Stephen. What I wanted to take away from this conversation was the fact that everybody talks about on social media, on our Facebook page, about Pip passing Rosie around. And I've always been a bit sort of, well, maybe she has to. She's running a farm. She's running those. She's working. Stella, I think, was very inappropriate to go and talk to Pip when she was in the milking parlour, milking. That's a totally inappropriate place to have that conversation. Rosie's obviously living on a farm near her grandparents and her great-grandmother with cousins around. She obviously goes to school as well. So a working mum who has to do the milking early or late, I think she's quite likely to have family help or paid help or whatever. So I'm not so worried about that. But what I am worried about, for Rose's sake, is this whole Rose is the queen when we're here. We all have to jump to her. We all have to run to the beat of her drum, or what's that expression?
March to the beat of her drum. Yes, I agree. And I was also, I shuddered slightly when Pip compared Stella to Toby.
Oh, that was a red flag flying with fireworks. Yes, definitely. I agree with you, though, that I think this is a long-term relationship. And the role that Hannah is playing in us learning more about how Stella feels is just brilliant, because Hannah disappeared off the scene for several years, really. We knew she was there, but we didn't hear very much from her. Odd spats with Neil at the farm. But yeah, I think having Hannah as a sounding board for Stella is definitely helping us understand more about where Stella's going, because she wants to be in that relationship with Pip. But as she says, it's going great.
I think we have more to come on Pip and Rosie in our next call. Those were our first few calls, and we'll hear the last one fairly soon. And if you'd like to join in by calling in yourself or dropping us a line by message or email, Jacqueline is here to tell you how, and all the details will also be in the show notes.
Now, the first option is to record a message or a plot prediction by going to www.speakpipe.com/dumtydum. Don't forget that T in the middle. The next option is to send us a voice note or a message via WhatsApp on 07810 012 881, or +44 and remove that first zero if you're calling from outside the UK. please keep your call to a maximum of 2 minutes. Well, finally, we do have an email address where you could contact us if you'd rather write to us with your views. Maximum of 250 words, please. The email address is dumtdum@mail.com. And do bear in mind, you need to be at least 18 to contribute.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Now, let's get back to our calls, and our final call comes in from Brian.
Hello, it's Brian. Hope you're well. Wasn't Pip annoying this week? It's too much. And Pip, he's the future of Brookfield. That just might tip me over the edge. When did she spend any time with Rosie? It always does seem to palm her off at other people. I know it's working mum. I can understand childcare is an issue. But then Stella's working full-time as well. Seems to take the extremes. I'm surprised Rosie recognises Pip anymore. Making Kate look like a model parent, she left her children on a different continent. But there we go. I do wonder what's going to happen if Pip's going to be the main archer at Brookfield in the future. Well, perhaps Rosie will turn out all right and we'll skip a generation. But completely and utterly self-centred and just wasn't interested in anything I was sorry about. And I think, poor old Stella, I don't know whether she realises what she got herself into. Anyway, I'll leave it there. Other than that, it was a really great week. I really enjoyed this week apart from that. So I'll finish it there. Bye for now. Have a lovely Easter. Bye.
Thank you for that call, Brian. I have a little bit of sympathy with Pip over Rosie. And when she's going to put on sort of 2-hour dramatic productions, I remember when Giles, my son, was about that age and he would do that sort of thing. And it was fairly spectacular in terms of the length and the detail that he would go into. And often he would start by basically appearing to be describing what was going to happen. And that was on and on and on. We never actually got to see the real thing, except it tended to involve dinosaurs. Yeah, it was working on dinosaurs at that age.
Yes, I remember doing the same thing myself. I remember my cousins and I making sock puppets and putting on kind of with a wooden clothes horse, making a puppet theatre. And then the poor parents and our nana, our grandmother, they were made to sit there. I remember my aunt sneaking off and getting another pot of tea and then being told off by her children. You're missing the best bit, Mom. But yes, the description of scene setting seemed to be a big thing. I understood that Rosie had done something and she wanted to show it off and she wanted to share it with her mum's partner. But the fact that they went to the bungalow, didn't they, to do it rather than in the cottage. So that seemed a bit off. I could understand if it was an evening being going to be spent in at Pip's cottage. But the fact that they'd moved it to Stella's place was one of those things. But yeah, that age is definitely let's put on a show time and it can be all absorbing. Somehow newspapers on knees helped me get through it and mine were in that phase. Turning the pages very discreetly. Now it's even easier. You could have the newspaper on your phone.
Yes, you just have a tablet on your lap and you can...
That's right.
You mentioned Hannah earlier. She said that she'd been in Ambridge now for 15 years.
Yeah.
And I thought I'd look that up to remind me. Yes, she arrived in November 2007 and stayed until about February of 2008 when she first arrived. And that was as a student doing work experience at Ridge Farm with Tom. And she had a crush on Chris back then, definitely. Mm. And then she disappeared off, came back 10 years later to the Barrow unit by when Chris was taken. Clearly, she's had an eye on him ever since. And so it'll be interesting to see how that develops over the cricket season.
Yeah, I think this cricket story is, it's good to get the cricket. We had a bit of farming this week. We've had the cricket come back. It's been a change of seasons. We've gone into springtime, so we're no longer navel gazing in front of the fire or in the pub all the time. We're thinking about moving outside and what's moving on in the agricultural world. So I've had a week where we've had two afternoons where it's been very warm, up to 19 degrees on Wednesday afternoon, which is lovely if you're working in the garden and whatever. But what also happens in St. Gwen and all agricultural areas around here is the flies come out. Now, why do we never hear about people swatting flies in Ambridge? Why is this agricultural area not overrun with people saying, you don't meet anybody without them saying, God, the flies are terrible today after the hot sun yesterday. So it's one of those things. I think the script writers are missing a plot line there. You know, you could have conversation about flies.
It's one of those things, though, that because they're writing so far in advance,
yeah,
they might have a warm day in Ambridge when it's actually snowing. So.
Like you've had floods and there were no floods. But there were this year, they timed it right, didn't they?
Yes. Sometimes it's right and sometimes it's not. But we tend to notice when they get it wrong far more than we do when they get it right.
Exactly. And one of the things Brian mentioned was about Stella trying to explain to Pip about how she felt and Pip not letting her get a word in edgeways. And that really, really was so flagrant. It felt, for goodness sake, I was shouting at the radio, for God's sake, Pip, let us finish a sentence. And that's a plot device that they use quite a lot on The Archers, isn't it? Where somebody cuts in a conversation, somebody can't quite finish it. So sticking to the form there.
We had it twice this week because the other conversation which had that effect was the one between Tracy and Chris.
Yeah.
Where Chris went away with the impression that it was Linda who wanted to chair the cricket committee rather than Robert because he kept interrupting Tracy. And she started by saying Linda because it was Linda who told her that Robert wanted to be there. So I think that that's going to be a fun little thing for the next couple of weeks, I think, until it's resolved.
But Linda, of course, always sells herself so well, doesn't she? The whole point about the pavilion and it needing an update and the fact that she thinks she can manipulate poor broke Oliver to get some money for them and the renovation of the cricket pavilion sold her to Harrison straight away. He as they walked away, he said, I'd much sooner have Linda anyway. Whereas he sounded very sceptical at first, didn't he?
Yes, he did sound rather sceptical, but then that's always the way with Linda, isn't it?
It is. She's definitely someone who puts you in two minds. But I think I'm glad to have the cricket back. So it's good cricket. And this shenanigans with the ongoing story with Hannah and her not-so-secret crush on Chris. Be good.
Yes.
Looking forward to the next week.
And it'll make a change from the somewhat grim storylines that we've been dealing with in recent weeks. Though they're bound to come back, both Harrison's future and the whole dog attack and what's going on at the Bull. Those will return, I'm sure.
Yeah.
For now, we've got some light spring storylines.
Indeed. And it's Easter next week, so it'll be all eggs and chocolate fun.
So those are the calls. Thank you so much for calling in. We do love to hear from you. Do call in next week, especially if you didn't call in this week. And that's quite a lot of you who didn't call in this week. Now, did we receive any emails or WhatsApp messages this week?
Yes, we had two. Now, the first one was from Emma in the Midlands. And it goes like this. Hello, Stephen and Jacqueline. Whilst I've enjoyed all the discussion about Fallon, Harrison, Alice and Harry over the past few weeks, I've been thinking along very different lines. So I'd love to know what you make of my prediction. Rather than all the recent events leading to Fallon and Harrison taking over the Bull, I think that Harrison going part-time in his work, self-sabotaging his career as a police officer, the arguments about money and children all seem to be leading to a big breakup. I think that attending Martha's birthday party and buying the doll's house is the start of Harrison and Alice getting together in the future, once Harry is out of the picture and Harrison's relationship with Fallon is over. I think this could be good for everyone, although would be a disaster for Chris and Harrison's friendship. Now, Fallon and Alice's relationship is already on the rocks. Alice gets the supportive and stable partner she needs. Harrison gets to be stepdad in a ready-made family, a new partner, and maybe even find a more environmentally related job that he craves. Fallon gets to follow her dreams unhindered. I think she will take over the cafe at the charging station and make a success of it. Of course, I may be completely wrong, but would love to know if anyone else thinks that this could be leading up to a big break and a total life change for Harrison. Love the podcast and look forward to it as my new Sunday treat. From Emma in the Midlands, Archer's listener since 1987, Dumpty-Dum listener for 3 months.
Thank you for that email, Emma. And I think those are interesting ideas. I have to say, I hope it doesn't happen that way. I think that Harrison and Fallon's relationship is quite interesting. And I think that Harrison and Alice wouldn't work out. Remember we had that awful scene when Alice had driven drunk from Borchester and had pulled up in Leader's Wood and Harrison had found her and then she tried to make a pass at him. I think that was something that meant they could probably never really get together. I think that would always be hanging over them. And I really don't think that Alice and Harrison quite works. I know what you mean in terms of Harrison wanting children, and here we have Martha ready and available to fulfill that role. And I also know what you mean about Fallon getting to follow her dreams unhindered, but I'm not sure that Harrison really does hinder her in doing that. I certainly agree with you about the taking over the cafe at the charging station, making a success of it. But I think that I'd be disappointed. I'd be rather sad if things panned out as you predict.
When I first read the email, I kind of felt like you. And I thought, no, I don't think I want that. But in fact, rereading it, it makes me think that actually there's a lot of grounds for what Emma is suggesting. And it's another way of looking at things. I do feel that there's going to be a bit of a backlash from Harrison buying that doll's house, that expensive doll's house, when Fallon is so worried about money. So I can see that that's a source of tension in their marriage, as with lots of other things. But as you are very fond of saying, Stephen, we only hear 13 minutes of every day in Ambridge. So we also, a few weeks ago, heard the loving relationship that Fallon and Harrison have together and their cozy cottage weekends. So a very interesting plot prediction. And because I'm rubbish at plot predictions, I love hearing other people's ones. And I very much appreciate that, Emma. Thank you very much for your message.
The doll's house, I think, is Harrison wanting a child and expressing that through being incredibly generous to other people's children, particularly his goddaughter.
Indeed.
The second email was from our regular correspondent, Chris. And it has the title, Not the Governess. And it goes like this. Hello, Jacqueline, Stephen, and Dumpty Dumland. This was just a great week in Ambridge. It was good to see Stella, even if it wasn't so great to see Pip. I loved Brian nudging Miranda for more information about Justin's past. Are we really surprised to know that Miranda was behind his wealth? The Aldridge family continues to be the most exciting clan of the Archers, and I really think Stella needs to have a conversation with Kate about her cousin Pip's aura. Have Kate and Pip ever been in a scene together? They are two very different sides of the Archer tree, and I can't imagine them having much to say to each other. The Kenton and Jolene plot has been put on pause, and I don't think anyone is missing it. Meanwhile, George and New Robert are creating the oldest horse in England. Some people complained about New Robert, but since I don't really remember the old one, he suits me just fine. What's more, putting George with him puts George with Linda, and Linda is someone who will in no way, shape or form put up with George's nonsense. About George, Jacqueline and Stephen, you were both right about him. You know I love the character, but he is, of course, awful. What is more awful, though, is how he gets away with his disrespect. He needs someone who sees through him. Those are the best George moments, and right now they are too rare. His dynamic with Emma is crazy. I think Linda supplies the resistance to his foolishness that makes the best radio, and I can't wait for more. Hopefully, by Friday, we won't have to wait for Stella to say, Pip, I am not Rosie's governess. Until next week, my friends, Chris in Indiana.
Oh, brilliant, as always, Chris. Thank you. I'm loving the fact that we're getting regular correspondence from you. I still think one day you should call in just so we can hear what a voice from Indiana sounds like. Linda, perfect foil for George. And as she said this week, don't encourage him, because didn't Robert say something like he's the Grundy that's most Joe? And she came back with, well, that's exactly why you shouldn't encourage him. George, at his most disrespectful, he can't try that out on Linda. He will get short shrift, I think. And Chris, I totally agree with you. His dynamic with Emma is ridiculously crazy. I have had a long conversation with my son, who's a lot older than George and a lot more sensible, this week. But he was talking about his son and how now he's the main carer just for a couple of months as they move from California to Annapolis. And he's saying he's actually quite concerned that he spends so much more time with Angus than her mom does. And that will always be the case whilst they're in this transition period, you know, between the British and the American army. So it's quite an interesting fact that my son is worrying that Angus will treat his mother with a kind of disdain because she isn't around. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
And Emma has created so many problems for George by just being Emma. Then the Will and Ed story around them, the uncle who is your father or stepfather or whatever. And not that I'm saying my son would be like that, but I would have that kind of problem. But there's always this, we don't know what happens when children are small, how much they take in, and then it comes out. How much is George a product of his childhood?
Yes. But we have years for that to play out. We will no doubt be discussing them 10 years from now.
If we're still here, they will be.
Now, before we move on to our Facebook, I just wanted to say a word or two about Patreon again. Those of you who are patrons of Dumpty Dum should have received your third newsletter this week, which has also gone out to our PayPal subscribers. As Jacqueline said last week, it's still something of a pilot, and we plan to publish it weekly. Initially, we'll be sharing Facebook group after a few days, and it went up yesterday. But it's the first step towards coming up with a proper offering to those of you who are willing to support Dumpty Dum financially. And if you have ideas for additional things you'd like to see in a Dumpty Dum newsletter, let us know either via Patreon or in the Facebook group or any other way that you'd like to communicate with us. And we're grateful to those of you who are already patrons. As soon as we found our feet, we plan to offer you ad-free podcasts, and we have a number of ideas for additional bonus content for patrons, so watch this space.
Now, I know that some of you have asked where the PayPal and Patreon money goes. So it's been a bit of a concern. So as of the last few weeks, it now all flows into a dedicated Dumpty Dum account, which means that it will go towards subscriptions for the Riverside Virtual Recording Studio that we use to record Dumpty Dum, and for the Descript app that Stephen uses to do the editing, along with other costs we incur bringing you this podcast each week. So thank you to all of you who already give to us. And hopefully, as we get our feet on the ground and start running, we'll be able to offer more content.
Let's move on to Facebook, where we have lots of very busy, friendly, thoughtful and thought-provoking members. And we need to give a very warm welcome to the newest of you, who are...
Robert Sanders, Julian White, Blake Seven.
Jemima Bowden or Bowden, it's never know which pronunciation people use. And Nick Rennett.
So let's hear what our Facebook group has been talking about this week from the lovely Vicky.
Hello everyone, Vicky Cole here, calling in on Friday before the final episode of the week. Naturally, this week there was much discussion of the new actor playing Robert, and some of us were finding it difficult. Sarah Seeger asked, is this going to be like when the council changed bin day and no one can cope? Jonah Titchmarsh said, 1 second in, this is a complete character change. Paul Newman said, much pushier than the real Robert. And Lillian McCarthy hadn't bargained for a complete personality transplant. Clover Slack thought that in the first episode, he came across as querulous and reminded her of, heaven forbid, Tony. Actually, I thought the same. But Helen Cook thought it was a clever transition device to have him in a bad mood and not feeling quite himself, and then he can settle back down. Andrea Twelves thought it was a good introduction, and Shirley Farrant-Anstey and Clover Slack are pleased to have Robert back. Melanie Ferris thinks he's doing very well, and Julia Delwich thought there were similarities to the old Robert in his manner. I agree. I thought there was something in the timbre, or as Lindy would say, timbre, of his voice that could be consistent with the previous actor's voice aging naturally. Manny McMerriweather thought that the way Lindy spoke to him is letting us know that she will guide us through the transition and that she enjoyed the performance. Lillian McCarthy did observe that Linda would never have called him Robert Darling, which she did throughout the week. And what are they playing at? Witherspoon has nothing against the new Robert, but he is missing Graham Blockie. And I think we can all agree on that. On to Stella and Rosie. Suyin Jordan was cringing listening to Pip and says, man, oh man, the pressure Stella must be under. And Gillian Corrigan says, Rosie is the boss around here, means Stella should run as fast as she can. Susan de la Mer thinks it will end in tears. And Pauline Pods thinks Stella might fall for someone else. There was a discussion about old horses on a post from Chris Gibson, including memories of Cranford Crystal. And slightly chillingly, Sandra Morgan fears for any other vintage ponies standing in George's way for a get-rich-quick scheme. There were several laugh-out-loud moments this week. Hooray! Michelle Wright heard Harrison say, anyone fancy some Chris? In the pub. It seems he has caught on about Hannah's feelings, even if Chris is in blissful ignorance. I'm going to finish with Brian and Miranda, and we are loving this. Heather Jones quotes the exchange between them in the restaurant. When Miranda asks, are we going to go the whole hog then? Brian, spluttering, I beg your pardon. Simply marvellous writing and acting. And Andrea Twelves thinks that if Brian were 20 years younger, Miranda wouldn't have been able to finish the sentence. Marie Bray thinks no part of Brian will go to waste once Miranda gets her claws in. That's it for this week. Do go and have a look at the Facebook page and join in if you can. Till next time. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you, Vicky, and thank you so much to everyone on the Dumpty Dum Facebook. If you'd like to join them, please do, but don't forget to answer the very easy membership questions so that we know that you are a real person. And I have to say, I have rejected, I think, 3 or 4 requests to join this week because were just nothing in those answers. And we do not want to be swamped with bots. Now, did we have any reviews this week?
Yes, we have. We've got one from Any1961 via Apple Podcasts. It goes like this. Great chat. 5 stars. Relaxing and enjoyable discussion about the residents of Ambridge. A must for Archers fans. Thank you very much for that, Any1961 from Great Britain.
Thank you very much. Now to Twitter, where you will find us at Dumpty Dum. Make sure you include the Archers hashtag using a capital T and A, so the visually impaired who use screen readers can enjoy any Archers-based tweets. As well as at Dumpty Dum, I can be found at Wenlock House.
And I can be found at Jberto San Gwen. But we can both be found on Blue Sky discussing the Archers and all things Ambridge, where I am at jberto.bsky.social.
And I am at wenlock.bsky.social. So let's find out who has won the Twitter medals this week.
Tweet, tweet, pushcat. Or should that be XX these days?
Hello, Jacqueline, Stephen, and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Purple Pumpkin here with Tweets and Skeets of the Week. And my thanks as ever to Bernadette, Jen, Kate, Glyn, and everyone else who tags at Dumpty Dum to make sure we see all the best ones. This week on both Twitter and Blue Sky, there was a lot of speculation as to whether Miranda is just taking Brian for a ride, and also whether Rosie will ring the death knell of Pip and Stella's relationships. As Olwyn, at ambridgeolwyn.bsky.social, asked, is it customary for working parents to dump their offspring on hapless friends and family at every opportunity? As a childless person, Olwyn is curious how characteristic Pip, Kate and Helen's behaviour is. There was also a small run of cricketing jokes about Chris and Hannah. For example, Loma Lindy starting with, are you going to get your stumps knocked, Chris? And both Jobo and Arrow.bsky.social and Bob Hawkins at bobhawkins.bsky.social felt the need to mention Chris's googlies. But we won't dwell too long on those. We'll move straight on to my medals for this week's Blue Sky Skeets and X posts, all of which we continue to consider as Tweets of the Week. In bronze position, it's newcomer to the podium, Trudy ML, at Trudy Mookow. Poor Robert, newly reincarnated, and Linda can't wait to get rid of him. The silver medalist is Loma Lindy 12 at lomalindy12.bsky.social. Miranda and Lillian, the Alexis and Crystal of the social scene. And the gold medal goes to Charlie Notton at 19 CEN. Brian mentioned that this was our mother's house when he and Jennifer were courting, and also where my niece stabbed her husband. And on that nostalgic note, that's it for this week. I hope to see you all on hashtag The Archers on Twitter and Blue Sky next week.
Thank you for that, Theo, and congratulations to all who were mentioned in this week's roundup. And don't forget, we are on Instagram at Dumpty Dum, where Theo looks after things. But if there is any Dumpty Dummer out there who would like to take over, who uses Instagram and knows what makes for a good feed, please let us know.
Next week, we'll be once again recording at the normal time of first thing on Saturday morning. So please get your calls in by midnight on Friday, UK time. That's Good Friday. So you'll all have had all day to think about it because you've got a bank holiday there. As we come to the end of this episode, we need to say thank you to all our wonderful contributors, the whole team who look after our social media and support us in so many invaluable ways. Thanks to you lot too. This lovely Dumpty Dum community is why we are here.
And we must say thank you to Kim Durham and Sonny Ormond for their voices, and to our podcasting parents, Lucy V. Freeman and Roy Field Brown.
Thank you so much for listening and joining us today. We are now off to Dublin Gouache. So it's au revoir from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
Dumpty 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 Dum, Dumpty Dumpty Da Da.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.